Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. Can everybody hear me okay?
Sort of.
Okay. You can hear me online? Okay, I'll try to project.
Good.
It's nice to see you all, and I hope you had a great holiday season. This is the first talk in the new year, and I thought I'd take the opportunity to talk about beginner's mind, since it's a time of beginnings for all of us, which is a well-known teaching of Suzuki Roshi's. And it's very easy to kind of go deeper into the archive, but I had a great holiday season, and it felt like the time to talk about it. So beginner's mind is a fresh mind, and a mind that attends appropriately to the details of the life that's right in front of us, our everyday life. And although we have lots to do and there's lots around us that is that we have to thank experts for, I'm interested in helping you discover your own beginner's mind. But I remember the first time that I was told that I could be an expert. I was 26, and I had been here in the area for only a few years. And it was a very like exciting, sort of almost seductive idea to me. It wasn't until much later that I kind of connected that the expert actually has to haul around a lot of stuff with them. Because we value some special capabilities, and because it takes time or effort to acquire certain competencies, and because we're rewarded and admired for solving specific types of problems, it can be quite difficult to let go of the expert self. To adopt a beginner's mind might feel like slowing down, at least at first, or it could make very little sense. But with practice, we can chip away at that. I think it's fundamentally an issue of attainment, desire for attainment, which can be such a strong idea, to want something of that in particular, instead of just attending to what's happening in front of us, a happening that's still forming. And we don't know what the outcome will necessarily be. So we insist or prefer this or that, or this to that, and that can take a hold of us. Some attainments are so incentivized in our culture. And I watch a lot of sports. That's a great example because it's so clear what the goal is in a sport. It's like a large amount of the appeal is the lack of ambiguity. So this narrow discipline where you're trying to get a ball to go to a certain place, for example, the first rule of sports is like, if something's working, you keep doing that. And in the Silicon Valley, a lot of the enterprises and businesses and ventures work the same way. Although this is the capital of the high risk venture, where someone's going to put millions of dollars in for something that may have a very small chance of actually working, but they have a group of investments and they They figure, you know, if I can invest in this many companies, if one or two does well, then I make money. But if you work at a company that's funded that way, you can, and I'm speaking in my own case here, you can find yourself well into a career that really hasn't ever done anything meaningful. And there's a toll to that. So it's dynamic and it's innovative. We have pressure to be innovative. And that affects the entire culture, whether you work in a venture related field or not. It's also very superficial, because if money is the only goal, we can skip or miss in elements of life that may have some other value that is not so apparent. And that's a shame, because one of the main roles of culture is to allow us to identify, watch, and emulate the most successful people and copy their competencies. And so that's why I think the beginner's mind teaching of Suzuki Roshi is so important to us. This wasn't something that just happened in this area 20 years ago or 40 years ago. It's been here for a long time. So with all of those cultural elements, we have choices, even if we don't know it. We can passively absorb those norms and values I talked about, or we can add elements to our life that help us, customs or practices that we follow. It's a shift that can creep into our lives. Although there could be an event or a shift that's more sudden that affects our approach to life. The expert's mind is going to tend to think, well, I'm this kind of person. And the beginner's mind is softer, is gentler. It's, well, I might just head this way for a little bit. I may be like this, but I kind of want to go this way. And maybe that, I think the I'm just thinking the term now might be the growth mindset. So to have security, have make sure that our family has what they need is one thing. To have work that's meaningful, to be able to live comfortably, or have or for our family to have choices and options that maybe we didn't have. That's natural. And when that doesn't seem possible, we struggle. But our fresh beginner's mind is closer to the start of whatever's now in our lives. With less preconception of where to put our effort, we can migrate towards what is more deeply important. What is the activity that we find most meaningful? And that could be an opportunity to help or address a need, to learn something new. Maybe we need to be seen. Maybe we need to acknowledge a mistake that we made. Or recognize when what we're doing is too narrow for us and we need to grow. To see others in a new light. And when to learn to let go. Because we've never experienced this new us, a practice directed towards remaining a beginner builds up a tolerance for what could be. to see a challenge as an opportunity for growth, and to appreciate the value of the totally obvious, which oftentimes demands that an old story be let go of or amended. It might not be so clear what matters to us. And it might not even be a matter. It might be a person. It may not be close to a norm or a consensus that you could build a concept around. And our beginner's mind sees this, and with a clarity that a conditioned mind does not have. The beginning of service on Saturdays, right after bowing, we chant something called the refuges. They are chanted in Pali, which is an ancient language. And so it's like the oldest part of our service. And it sounds like a beginning song. It sounds very sweet. It starts in the middle of my vocal register and then goes high in the second line and then low. And the Pali translates to, I go with refuge with the Buddha, with the Dharma, and with the Sangha. And then what's chanted is the words for two times I go with refuge or shelter to the Buddha, with the Buddha, with the Dharma, and with the Sangha. And then three times I go in refuge with the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha. The interesting thing is the word for to go with is gacchami, and but it's more of a doing or going. It's not a place or event. So when we chant this, we chant to affirm that our trust and faith is in what we refer to as the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So our spiritual path is to live in the Buddha way. To follow this way is to take responsibility, to learn to help others, to develop loving kindness. We just chanted the loving kindness meditation. That's a great, you know, it's a wonderful way of describing loving kindness. I always, when the part about the mother at the risk of her life, it's always so dramatic for me. It really puts a kind of this is it, you know, like an urgency and makes me think about the care that the tradition has, like that, you know, what's been passed to us is to take it, to not take lightly. So there's an emphasis in it. Also, to follow the Buddha way is to build trust in your own awareness. To build trust in your own awareness. And, you know, we have a lot of competition in that. There's a lot of opinions and ways to ask the consensus reality of what we should think about a certain thing, but we trust in our own awareness, both in our mind and our heart. And in Buddhism, there's not such a differentiation between the two. We tend to emphasize the heart, but the mind is coming along with it, and it's interdependent. And then also to follow the Buddha way is to be open to our own experience. And to be open to our own experience that is behind any description of it. But still, I'm talking about it, so I'm trying my best because beginner's mind is that important. So the emphasis, even from the early days of the Buddhist tradition, is to put yourself into this path directly. And that's what the chant, I talk about the translation because it's embedded in there. Even though a place like a shelter or a refuge seems like a physical place, we might say Canando is a refuge, but our refuge is in the way, actually. So to go with trust that, yeah, nice guys don't finish last or they never get ahead, we have that trust. Because how else would all of this flourishing occur? I mean, imagine a world where no one was kind to one another. It's in our nature. And the examples are around when we keep our minds open and non-discriminatory. I go with trust that I can't fool myself anymore. Time is limited, chances are fleeting. That's the truth. Even though the Dharma is, strictly speaking, the Buddha's teaching, Dharma is also what is true in the broadest sense. So as students of the Buddha and as people living in the modern world and in modern Western culture, we really need to cultivate a love of truth. Beginner's mind helps us see the truth that's right in front of us. And I go with trust that I need the support of my family and community, the Sangha. So we chant the refuges, and it contains all of these multitudes. And we emphasize the getting with it, getting with the Buddha, getting with the Dharma, going with the Sangha. You don't have to start a new relationship or make a big physical move. There's no need for a big new beginning in life to develop spiritually. In fact, growth into everyday life might be more effective. To just work from the inside out with the life that we have. So as I'm getting further along, I can't really fool myself that a big change, a big superficial change would really benefit me. In fact, I'm more skeptical of like what a big change would do at this point. We really have great energy in the Sangha now. I have a feeling of progress that's come with the collective efforts of us all. And it's really wonderful to see. So even if the beginner's mind is maybe more individually like oriented, it's really something that is also that the Sangha, he really has to have as well. And there's a youthful and fresh quality to it. I told you I had a great holiday season. I saw my daughters, my older daughter is in college now. And she's growing and doing well, and there's a lot of concern, you know, as a parent you have for your children. And there were a lot of times when I would say I couldn't really look back on like earlier parts of childhood as clearly with a beginner's mind. But now as I grow in confidence in her as a young woman and can look back a little more fondly as a young person, as a young father, I thought of, well, kids' songs have a lot of beginner's mind elements to it. And there is a song from the Backyardigans, which came out when she was very little. And I just want to maybe sing a little bit. This song came out when she was a baby and we watched it together. And it goes, it's called Into the Thick of It. And it goes like this. Into the thick of it, into the thick of it, into the thick of it, but we can't know where we're going. We've made a stellar start to find the jungle's heart, but all we'll find is nothing if we can't see where we're going. And it goes on. I don't know how this part goes, but sometimes the path is never straight. The jungle is kind of tricky. They're on a journey to find the jungle's heart. And sometimes there's no path at all, which makes it hard to navigate. And though we're moving through it quick, that won't do us any good if we're going around in circles. But as you get older, you start to perceive that you do go around in circles, and you try to go the right way but fail, sometimes the path is hard to even see. So it's just the cutest. It's like a preschool barbershop quartet. And the lead singer, she hits the high notes. But I think what we teach our kids is really, it can be a window into our most intimate selves. And I think I used to be so like, used to be so bittersweet that, you know, I didn't appreciate it more. But now I can look back at it fondly. Those early times with her. So I'm considering why Suzuki Roshi urges us to remain beginners in our minds and hearts. To discover Zen in California in this time and place I think it's an intuitive choice for us. You can tend to overthink things like religion. But I mean, the fact is I converted and I'm the first person in my family to do that. But I think more deeply, like what drew me to this place in this religious tradition is embracing change and a nature to life that is in accord with both my mind and heart. But it is a religious tradition. I think it's important to embrace that. There's you know, we have coffee in the mornings, and earlier in the week, someone came and was talking about, you know, secularism, and it's like, you know, the kids these days, they're secular. They're not jiving with religion. I'm paraphrasing what he said. And I thought about that, you know, later in the morning. And then I remembered when I was at a New Year's Eve party, I was talking to this young person, and I was recommending this show on Amazon. It just came out. Man on the Inside. It's about this elderly gentleman who goes on to solve a mystery in a retirement center. And it has great humor, even though it's amidst these difficulties and complexities of aging. It's a very human show. And I said, you should check it out. It's a real wholesome show. And she said, like, without any hesitation, I like wholesome. Now that's a religious statement. And to say, you know, the kids are into secularism these days, that's like an expert's perspective, you know? Yeah. But just to say, I like wholesome, to me, it communicates a lot more, like, in, you know, what's deep in their heart, you know? So I really like that, and I wanted to share that. So maybe we have to get more savvy about describing what it is, but I don't think so. It's maybe just be more careful for myself, like when I try to tell others how the world is. I know I'm giving a talk and I'm trying to say things about reality. And it's difficult because our own experience is the realest, most vivid thing to us. We have to somehow have other people's thoughts and ideas expressed to us, and then we have to kind of relate to it and form and decide if we form some shared view with that person. So that bias of selfishness, I suppose, is something that beginner's mind also helps, you know, chip away upon. Is this so? And so, so I think more and more, if it just comes to it, you know, someone new comes to sit. That I can sit with them and relate to them is that's enough. That's all I have. Thank you. Diane, you're on mute.
Oh, I'm mute. Thank you, Travis. I liked your talk. You're an ordained priest now, but, and so that means that you give talks and you're also then a teacher. So how can you like teach newcomers or talk about the Dharma, but still encourage people to have beginner's mind and not think that what you're saying or what you're teaching is like dogma or the truth? And how can we even have students who are open to what's being experienced and said, but then seek their own truth, their own meaning, and then be open to that?
Yeah, there's a lot into that. Thank you for for those comments and questions. My perspective is that you're always a student, and you could have more experience with practice. We have our sitting practice. We have the relationship to our teacher. But our teacher is also a student, as well as a teacher. And there is a learning that, you know, with our beginner's mind that never ends as long as we're alive. And how could it be any other way, right? So dogma or some kind of ossification or to codify it as something it's to lose it. So that's what I mean about the expert kind of being weighed down. So I think it's even more important for someone who's experienced to kind of renew. And I'm also just kind of aware that I'm relatively early along in my studies, but I start to feel the progress of things, right? And that's encouraging. So I was telling you about how I feel the progress of the Sangha. It's something I feel and I'm happy about. I like the culture that we're creating here, which is another thing that Suzuki Roshi was really he was really advanced about, kind of understanding that it's not something that you just absorb from mainstream culture. You're making culture. Yeah. And you know, it starts with your own family, and they may be your toughest critics, and that's because of the importance of the relationship. But every relationship is an opportunity, and to just have sit a little bit longer and to have become more accepting of the tradition and the teachings is where I think I'm at.
Thank you.
Travis, I wonder if you could characterize the sense of beginner's mind, or if it's possible to do that. Built its manifestations. This is
a little louder.
This is the way to think about it, but what does it feel like? Is maybe a way.
What does it feel like?
What is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Repeat the question, please, Trevor.
Sure, sure. John Mark asked, what does beginner's mind feel like? And was there some other aspect of
it? Just to characterize it more subjectively.
It's a familiar feeling. And the best way I can characterize it is by singing Backyardigans. I spent a lot of time trying to think of it, and I think Into the Thick of It is really it. There's a dynamism to it, and you don't know where it's going, but I think if we have that kind of tell you where the conflict came for me was when I just think of it like a refuge, Buddhism, the Triple Treasures as a refuge, it's like a contraction to me, almost. Like, maybe it's because I remember the Tom Petty song, Refugee, because, you know, it's like if you look at somebody subjectively as a refugee, you're like, I don't want to be that. That's like somebody who's like struggling and another person's taking some kind of, or a group is taking a humanitarian effort towards this person. And I think this shelter is, it's like, this way is gonna help me. And it doesn't seem like it would help me. It seems like it would constrict me because I have to follow all these rules. But actually people have like thought about this for a while and actually gives you more options. These guidelines of trying to build your own awareness and to develop loving kindness and like, who does that help? I mean, you think it's like to help others? Not really. It starts with you. And then when you start to build that, then can be breathtaking how fast it happens, like how fast your life expands. That you're like, where you get stuck with this person, you always have this argument. It's like now all of a sudden it's like, in the moment when you're doing the thing you've done so many times habitually, you see the door out the side. And it was always there, but you didn't see it because you were just locked in this like, well, this is the way it is. So just expansive, you know, like the sky. If there's no other questions, we could go through some announcements. Does anyone have? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was thinking of a beginner's mind as a clean desk, mm-hmm. of freedom. Only don't know mind. The other thing I was thinking about this week, from the Metta Sutta, don't do anything that the wise would reprove. You know, one of the beautiful things about chanting these things, I mean, over and over again. I mean, you can come on Wednesday and say, "Don't, can't we chant something else?" No, this is what we're chanting. I mean, then for years and years and years, we chanted the Heart Sutra. Major change, you know, the Metta Sutta, and it just gets in you, and words come out. Words are just there, and sometimes things just come up. Like that thing about the mother taking mm-hmm. care of the mother. For my mother's funeral in 98, I wanted the Heart Sutra. Les said, "No, we're chanting the Metta Sutta." And then I go, "Oh, because of my mom." Anyway, nice thing. Also remember saying to Les something about being his students. And he said, "No, we're all Buddhist students." And mm-hmm. I like that.
Mm, that's nice. Thanks, Carolina. Anyone else? Yeah.
So you're like a carpenter. You've gotten really good at carpenting. And you're 20, 30 years into your career. If you adopted the beginner's mind at that point, what would...
Can you speak up?
Yeah, so if you're a carpenter, if you're really far into your career, and you've heard of the beginner's mind at that point, you're late into your career, what would you do differently, I guess,
The question is, if you were like a master carpenter and you came upon this idea of beginner's mind, then how would you respond? How would your life change? It's a good question. And I think the shallow sort of front of mind would sort of be like, this feels like it's slowing down, or I don't feel as effective. But if you know your stuff and you're like capable, I don't think you lose the expertise of carpentry or whatever it is, the skills that you have. I think it's more that you understand more when you can do something different. So maybe that's the moment you become a master at carpentry, is because you know all the skills of like what is conventional. But it's like, if you are in a situation where you're like, you know, that post, you know, needs to go that way, there's maybe an option that's different, that's not something that would be conventional, but that you like can see. And so it has great appeal to people that are creative, the people that build, the beginner's mind, because it never gets old. Like if I tried to give this talk and say, well, I'm an expert in beginner's mind, that would be the most ridiculous thing, right? It's only just, it's like it goes with our life, and it doesn't supersede anything. It's just that mind that's expansive and that is there before the concepts come in. And it works with sitting. And I think Suzuki Roshi talked about beginner's mind specifically here with our Sangha, because it's such an urgent thing for people that are working and working on innovating. Both when that's working well and when it's not working well. Does that make sense? Do you think that if you were building something and you had too many options, that it could be paralyzing? Yeah. I think it takes faith. There has to be some faith, and it has to be built up with experience. Because we want definitions, our minds want definition. We want to know which way to go and what's right and so forth. So you don't have to do it all at once, but and like I said, culture is so much about taking what's working and adopting it. It's like the shortcut to everything, right? You don't have to rebuild the wheel. You just, hey, that's how we do that. So there's such a tremendous amount of conditioning that shouldn't be thrown out, but with a fresh mind, we can see it for what it is, and we can grow from there.
Could I ask a question?
Yes, Brent.
Yeah, I'm reading a book by Hung about Hung Po, and it says in there that the Buddha is mind, basically. So I'm wondering, in your experience, to the extent that you've gotten into that, if you wouldn't mind talking about what you see in that.
What kind of mind?
The Buddha is mind. And you said it was Hong Po's writing? I have a mind. I have a body. And I think the beginner's mind is a spirited mind. I think it's a mind that's less about seeing and it's more about just perceiving what is before anything, you know, any concepts. When you know, we sit in zazen, we can become aware of an awareness that's before anything else. And then we know we're not just mind. And I don't want to contradict Hong Po, but I feel like mind is kind of constricting to the Buddha. I think the Buddha is wholesome. That's my answer. Thank you, Brett.
I think that what I feel, what we have been talking all about, is when you brought up children, and when they do something for the first time, it is this feeling of discovery, and joy that comes from the feeling of discovery. I think that is the most elemental and essential and fundamental thing. And even when you're making something or putting something together, you were saying one day, I'm making pizzas, and I came across something new. So it's just this feeling of discovery, this feeling of joy that comes up and says, oh, I discovered something. And that discovery in itself can be very rewarding.
Yeah.
In itself. Found something out, and I discovered something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a big motivation for me, the discovery of the new, to have an adventure like the Backyardigans, and then to get through it and to tell others about it. Yeah. Thanks. Diane.
I think Suzuki Roshi put it really simply when he said, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. I think the beginner's mind is always open and ready to receive, ready to have new ideas or new ways of doing things. So, you know, if you're an expert and you keep doing the same thing over and over again the same way, then you're not open to new possibilities and new discoveries. So I think you put it very succinctly and simple. Mm-hmm. Many possibilities.
And the freedom of discovery is there. You know, if I think about the term innovation, it's like a systematic type of newness, right? Like, yeah, go find something new, but it needs to be within this like framework where we can build off of that. It's part of our strategy. And it's kind of a tamped down version of adventure. not that you can't have really satisfying work and meaningful work, but there's a danger lurking in that, like, you know, it, he put it simply. And those of us that have had, you know, failed ventures and just setbacks along the way professionally, it's like, okay, that's something I've learned. It's like, keep your beginner's mind. Keep it open enough that you can watch cartoons with your kids and make sure that, you know, you both allow for your children to go make their own discoveries. But then now also as they're older, they come back and they help me. That's the best part. Thank you, Diane. Oh gosh. Wow, this has been, thank you for all your questions and thanks for talking about beginner's mind with me.
This talk was brought to you by the Cannondoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to cannondoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.